I didn't. I mean, I thought that was a chicken call. Excuse my language on that, but that was I've never seen anything like that before.
Do you feel comfortable about your job status? Do you feel like you've made a case to continue?
I'm feeling pretty good. Pretty good.
So, you had a good Thanksgiving, Tori?
I had an absolutely fantastic Thanksgiving. We were trying to figure out sort of when was the last time that Iowa sports had a better weekend, and it's hard for me to think of one.
It was so close to perfect.
It really was. That basketball game was disappointing, but, you know, I was starting to feel like we were a little spoiled, but I don't know.
Yeah. Well, welcome to, I don't know, the 14th Saturday of the 12 Saturdays podcast. I'm James Bladel.
And I'm Tori Breck.
And we are still just, I don't know about you, I'm actually very, just almost giddy with the outcome of the Iowa sports this weekend. I mean, well, and not just this weekend, but even, you know, the Notre Dame game last night was also a solid win.
Yeah, I took Jim back to Carver. He hadn't been there in a while. And
about 12 years.
What a great way to break him back in with a win over a solid opponent, a name opponent, and a 98 to 95, something like that.
Yeah, 98-95. And I don't know if you're watching any of the other games, but Wisconsin just won their ACC Challenge game. I think they scored a total of like 55 points or 58 points or something. So definitely an anomaly to be knocking on the door triple digits.
As I pointed out, could Iowa be the Oregon of college basketball?
I don't know.
Minus the ridiculous.
You know, I was going to say, we're probably minus the multi-billion dollar equipment contract. But really, I mean, ostensibly this podcast is about football. And what a game on Saturday. I mean, coming off of the eking out the win of Michigan and, you know, did you see, I mean, our predictions did not call for the dominance, I guess, that we saw.
No, you know, it was a weird game because I had a feeling Iowa was going to win, and I thought that Iowa had the better team, especially with all the injuries, et cetera, that Nebraska had. But I wanted it personally so bad as a fan just to put a stamp on the season and to erase that losing streak. And I think after the last couple seasons of Iowa football, where you sort of got inured to bad news and bad things happening, I was worried that I wanted it so bad that there's no way it could happen. So I think that sort of tempered some of my, I guess, not enthusiasm, but it tempered my hope and expectations a little bit.
See, I woke up and I started listening to, you know, the pundits and prognosticators and the predictors, and nobody was even, you know, I mean, everybody was being respectful to Iowa that, oh, yeah, the Hawkeyes are going to hang tough in this one. But ultimately, you know, Nebraska's just got too much speed, too much talent, and they're at home, you know, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And when I started to hear that sort of general conventional wisdom that, you know, Iowa was going to look good in a loss, I started to think, you know, maybe we just read too much into that Michigan win. Maybe this team is not what we think they are. But not only did they play, I think they played much better than they had the week before at Michigan. I think, you know, we're back to the Ferentz trademark where the team is playing its best in November and it's improved all year round.
Yeah, I'd agree with that. And, you know, for me, less maybe even a little than Iowa's performance, which had been decent the last couple weeks. I've watched quite a bit of Nebraska football this season, and I was not that impressed. I mean, even before all their injuries hit them, they got thrashed by UCLA. They struggled here and there. So, you know, I guess I didn't see this alleged talent disparity. The main thing that I was worried about was it being in Lincoln and that big crowd and, you know, just sort of Iowa's historical ineptitude against it. But as far as player versus player, I thought Iowa matched up pretty well, which ultimately I guess they did, right?
Yeah, and you know, and the things everybody was playing, I think the team is playing its best football at the end of the year, and you know, it's that defense was dominant with the linebackers, but you know, it was the linebackers were good at the beginning of the year. They weren't this good. You know, the running game was pretty solid. It wasn't this solid at the beginning of the year. You know, I think that's kind of what I'm getting at, is everything seems to be trending upward.
Well, and one thing I want to point out, and I want to point this out because we're in the midst of a happy ending, a successful season. You know, it's always bugged me a little bit when people say, well, you can't use injuries as an excuse for a poor season or struggling or whatever. Okay, well, you know what? Iowa was exceptionally healthy this year. You know, not a lot of major injuries to big-time impact
players.
That's
true.
And look how we ended up. 8-4 and playing our strongest football in November. And then you look across the conference and you look at Nebraska and you look at Northwestern, teams that were beset by injuries, and they couldn't overcome them. So, you know, I'm going to go on record during a good season that we're happy about to sort of say, you know what, injuries do matter, and it's not an excuse. It's a reason. And last year, in no small part, Iowa did not play well. But, you know, if it hadn't been for the spate of injuries they had, I really think they could have climbed to somewhere around 500. I don't think the 4-8 was a true reflection of, like, the program spiraling out of control or whatever some people would want to say. It was a combination of some attrition and a peak or a trough in the program, but compounded by a lot of injuries to important players.
Yeah. You know, I would tend to agree with that. I think particularly on the offensive line last year, we just, you know, in a Ferentz team, that's where everything begins and ends. I do think that injuries are part of the game. They happen to everybody. The question being, you know, how deep are you and can you cope with them? And I think the answer for Iowa, and especially, God, we're seeing it this year with Northwestern, is the answer is no. You know, you are not deep enough to absorb injuries to your key contributors.
Yeah, there's probably about, what, 10, 15, maybe not even that many teams that can really absorb a lot of major injuries.
Well, yeah, not at skill positions. Well, and then the other part of it is just that, you know, we seem to have been snake bitten quite a bit here in the last few years, you know, especially at running back, but even other positions, you know, offensive line. And I think, you know, so it seems like, you know, maybe we're kind of reverting back to the mean. And if we do, you know, it works for us. But hey, speaking of individual players, did you see not in addition to having a good game in Nebraska, CJ Fedorowicz won I think he was the only Hawkeye that won one of those league awards.
You know, I didn't see that particular one. I thought on Big Ten Network, Brandon Funchess of Michigan won the tight end of the year award.
Right. You know, CJ Fedorowicz was first team coaches, first team All Big Ten.
Okay. Well, no, I've been sort of reevaluating some of my, mild disappointment with Fedorowicz, and I've come to the conclusion that I think it was based more on fan hype and recruiting hype than anything. I think he actually was a lot more productive than I was giving him credit for. But
well, and he's really stepped it up these last three weeks here, beginning with the Purdue game. So, you know,
that's true.
It's like you weren't wrong, you know, at the beginning of November.
Well, and if anything, my criticism has been more on, you know, well, he had a few drops, but I mean, I don't think he was necessarily utilized earlier in the year as well as he could be. Again, as you and I have talked about, he's one of our few, you know, just elite type athletes at his position. And it seemed like he was sort of, you know, odd man out at times. And that was disappointing.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it'll, you know, I mean, it's good. It was good to have him, and it was good that he was healthy. You know, I mean, we had that experience with Moyeki and other folks who were tight ends that were great, but, you know, just couldn't seem to stay healthy. So, yeah, it turned out to be fairly well, and the guys coming behind him, I think, are also pretty capable. So so that I can, you know, I think.
Is Doozy back next year?
Oh, yeah, yeah. He's fairly young, Doozy, and I think there's one more year of who's the other one? Hamilton?
Yeah, I think Doozy can end up being a Dallas Clark or yeah.
Let the hype begin.
No. I mean, I'm talking about like the more of the receiving threat, you know.
Well, he's definitely got the legs. I mean, we saw him outrun the Ohio State secondary.
Yep, exactly.
Yeah, no, that was pretty impressive. And you know who else I found out is coming back, and I didn't. I guess I just whiffed on this one. I thought Kevontae Martin Manley was a senior, and you and I were talking, I think, on the last podcast about who's going to return punts and kicks next year. Well, but he's just a junior.
Nice.
So, you know.
Well, you have to be excited. You look at Tavon Smith had a great game, great last two games, and you know Powell has all kinds of crazy potential.
Yeah, I haven't seen him the past couple weeks, but yeah, I mean he's got this. Speed and Hillier was coming along.
What are we going to do without the Shump, though?
Well, we'll have to make do without Shumpert.
Maybe Shump can have a Tate the Holloway moment in our bowl game.
That would be a nice send-off, you know.
Wouldn't it?
For him, yeah. So, well, you know, but it bodes well. I think, you know, the offensive line, you know, assuming that Scherf stays, I guess that's a big assumption. Then the only senior is Van Slotten, I think.
Van Slotten.
And then, you know, the rest are you know, young guys that have a lot of experience. So I think that's pretty solid. And I guess it all just comes down to the linebackers next year.
Yeah, that's a big loss, and I think we have some nice athletes coming back in that position. I think the defensive line being solid will hopefully allow them to be free. That's always one of those weird questions is, you know, are your linebackers that great, or are they just freed up to make plays because your defensive line's playing better?
No, these linebackers are freaking great.
No, I absolutely are, but I think you can get by with good linebacking play if you have stellar defensive line play. So, you know, everything feeds together. That's one of the beauties of football, really, you know?
Yeah, and, you know, I think we're just kind of saying you've got to keep stepping up on the other rest of the defense and the offense if you're going to overcome what is probably an unavoidable step back in the linebackers.
So before we move away from Nebraska, though, let's talk about a couple things. One is how freaking sweet it is to, you know, shut those delusional fans up for a little while, and then the antics of their coach. What's your thoughts on the Nebraska fan base and the man leading the Big Red?
Can I start with Pleady?
Please do.
Oh my God, that guy is a train wreck. I really thought he was trying to get fired. I thought he was burning bridges in his press conference. I mean,
well, I believe I said dead man walking after he had his, like, you know, hat swipe at the official.
You tweeted that, and then I think one of the touchdowns, I tweeted something about, you know, Mrs. Pelini making a call to U-Haul because, you know, it seemed like it was just over. He was like, you know, the proverbial monkey flinging his verbal poo, you know, and just trying to make sure he, you know, got everybody covered with as much turds as he could on his way out, including Kirk Ferentz, which I thought was weird.
Ferentz is known for his classless behavior and his volcanic temper.
Well, we saw him a little animated too, nowhere near, you know, Pelini level, you know, category Pelini meltdown. But I mean, he was definitely, well, who is it that said that, you know, the irony of this week is that it was Carl Pelini who was exiting his career with more dignity. but yeah, I mean, so I was surprised that he's coming back. I mean, I guess we'll see if they get humiliated in the bowl game. You know, I feel like the AD maybe left, you know, maybe left himself an out by saying, you know, he's looking forward to working with the coach in the future. I mean, the future could be like a month, right?
Yeah, there's a little wiggle room in there. You always got to leave the wiggle room.
I don't know. You know, I don't have these run-ins with the delusional Nebraska fans the way that I know a lot of people do. I know we have that one friend that's from Omaha that's just like, you know, rabidly anti Nebraska and, I think he's on, you know, he's in a new level of heaven right now.
Well, he was at the game.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's great. You know, what I think is great is just that now it can be a respectable rivalry. And especially if we, you know, can hang another loss on them when they come to Iowa City next year.
Yeah, we need to win a couple in a row, or at least two out of three for a while, because, yeah, until you do that, you're not going to get any respect. I mean, what I'm getting at is just the level of delusion that they have. I mean, they actually think it's their birthright to, they should be competing for at minimum a Big Ten championship every year and probably a national championship every two or three years. And it's like, that's just not reality anymore. You are in the same pot as Wisconsin, Iowa, Michigan State. I mean, that's who that's what your program is now, Nebraska. Deal with it.
Well, and it's weird that, and I think you mentioned this, it's weird that Missouri and Texas A&M can have such success in the SEC. Nebraska probably thought, well, look, you know, we're coming over to the Big Ten, you know, with a bunch of, you know, also-rans. And it's like, well, you know, I mean, Nebraska was always one of the elite programs in the Big 12, and the other two were just kind of also-rans.
But this is what I mean about their fan base being delusional, Jim. If you listen to, like, read some of their comments, like, either online, like I was reading the Omaha World Herald comments section last week, and you listen to hear about them on talk radio. They honestly believe that it's because the Big Ten sucks, it's somehow through osmosis dragged them down and made them worse. And I mean,
like it's just contagious.
Yeah, exactly. You know, like they got Minnesota-itis or something, you know. That's a known disease, by the way.
Well, you know, they did lose to Northwestern right away, and we did kind of tell them, hey, you know, this is something that happens sometimes.
This happens.
Northwestern exactly. Beats you inexplicably, or, you know, and then they do get to the Big Ten championship game, you know, like you're talking about their birthright, and they just got embarrassed.
Oh, yeah, ran off the field by the Badgers. The real Big Red, by the way.
Exactly. Yeah. So, no, I think it was definitely good. I'd like to see that continue. I think they've been incredibly lucky that they have been playing us, you know, in the, you know, that they played us two, you know, home and home in, like, was it Ferentz's first years here? And then they played us, you know, they kicked off this rivalry in what is probably arguably one of his nadirs of his careers. I mean, even worse than 2007. So, you know, I think now that they're getting a taste of what the Iowa program is nominally competitive. All right, well, let's toast this awesome victory and
a post-Thanksgiving libation.
Oh, yeah, yeah. And put a cap on the really amazing turnaround of 2013.
And here's to Black and Gold Friday.
Exactly.
More in the future. Do this every year.
All right, well, looking into the future here, I mean, you know, we talked a little bit about some of the personnel coming back. The schedule next year is lining up. I mean, you know, it's hard to say because you look at this year's schedule and, you know, we saw six wins. But you look at next year's schedule and it's going to take a number of teams, I guess, turning around their programs fairly quickly to start to put a scare in us. I mean, you know, what do you think when you look at that schedule next year? I mean, you lose Michigan State, you lose Ohio State, you lose Michigan, you lose Penn State. You know, and you're basically left with Wisconsin, which is graduating like 24 seniors. You know, you look at, you know, Nebraska again, you look at, Minnesota, which, you know, let's assume they can continue to improve, and that's about it.
Yeah. You know, I was with you on that. And then I started thinking about how we went 8-4 against an alleged hard schedule this year. And, you know, that, I guess, kind of made me a little nervous. A couple of the games that I have some concerns about at Pittsburgh. I know they didn't have a great season this year and they're not that powerful, but Iowa seems to always find a way to drop a game in the non-conference that they really probably shouldn't, looking at Northern Illinois this year. So that one has me concerned.
So, you know, Ferentz wants that Pittsburgh, you know, I mean, that's his.
Oh, For sure. But yeah, you look at that Big Ten schedule and, you know, you get Wisconsin at home, you get Nebraska at home. You know, it's hard not to expect 10 wins. You know, that's sort of, this is way early, but that's kind of what I'm looking.
Yeah, I think 9 for sure. You know, even if you drop the, you know, 9-3 looks pretty, almost starting to look like a worst case scenario if your team is able to, you know, build on some momentum for this year.
Well, and let's go totally crazy here, Jim. Let's say Iowa loses 0 or 1 games, very unlikely, I get it. But if they did that this year against next year's schedule, they wouldn't even be sniffing BCS national championship. This year, next year though, with a soft schedule, you know, if they went undefeated or one loss, could you see them be like legit in the top four possibly?
You know, I guess it depends on what's going on, or, you know, in other conferences and how, you know, everybody else's strength of schedule is looking at. But I mean, definitely the path is there next year in a way that it isn't here this year.
It's crazy to think about. I mean, I don't think it's going to be something we actually have to worry about. I guess I'd love to worry about that.
Well, and you and I have talked about just how much, you know, you can do your damnedest, and it's just so much luck is involved. The ball has to bounce the right way. You know, your opponents actually have to, you know, play outside themselves after you beat them. You know, just all kinds of things that are beyond the scope of any one team or coach's control.
Don't want to try a 58-yard field goal with 1 second magically added onto the clock against your most hated rival when you're ranked number one in the country. Something like that. That what you're saying?
Oh, save that. We got to talk about that game. But yeah, but I mean, I think it's possible. I guess you would. So I think for Iowa, and especially against that schedule, I think for Iowa to be top four, you have to be undefeated. That's the only way anybody's going to take you seriously.
I think you're absolutely correct about that. And people will still be throwing rocks at you.
What's that?
People will still be throwing metaphorical rocks.
You're already at a huge disadvantage, we're finding, because you're in the lowly Big Ten. And I think that's kind of what, you know, some of the conversation that we were having after this weekend is, you know, what was it? Auburn beats Georgia on a last second play because the SEC is so strong. And Ohio State beats Michigan on a last second play because the Big Ten is so weak, right?
Well, I mean, if you're in SEC country, basically the national championship's already been decided with Auburn beating Alabama, right? I mean, we might as well just stop now.
Well, and that's the maddening thing when they talk about, you know, Auburn potentially jumping Ohio State is what they really are saying is that all of the other conferences are playing for the right to play them.
Well, yeah, and Ohio State hasn't lost in two freaking seasons. I hate Ohio State. Let me go on record.
Oh, God, it makes me puke to have to defend them.
And Urban Meyer is a scurvebag, and I think they're cheating, and I think he's sleazy. However, so is every team in the Big – or in the SEC, basically, as well. So they basically are an SEC team. But, you know, they haven't lost in two seasons. How can you possibly think about leaving them out of a national championship game?
It really baffles me. And then you people are like, well, you know, you got a good case for the SEC being stronger. It's like, it doesn't matter. If you don't want to see the Big Ten relegated to MAC or Mountain West status, you cannot allow anyone to rationally entertain the idea that our undefeated conference champion should be jumped by a one-loss team.
Well, and the SEC thing is the big lie anyway, though, Jim. I mean, they only beat up on each other. Let me ask you this. If the SEC is so mighty and dominant, how could two, you know, kind of also rans in the Big 12 come in there and start winning a bunch of games?
Yeah.
I mean, how does Missouri get into the championship game? How does Auburn get in there after going – I mean, they had a worse record than Iowa last year, if I recall correctly. Weren't they 3-9?
I don't know. I don't know what their record was last year. No, you're right. It's just that it and then, you know, you look at Florida State. Why are they getting a pass in this discussion? Why is it just Ohio State, you know, it's that schedule is called into question? Well, Florida State beat Clemson, beat them pretty handily. And what else have they done? They played a bunch of colleges. I had to go Google them. I didn't even know what state they were in.
They're in Florida. They're faster because the sun makes their legs longer.
No, it is ridiculous. It is maddening to think that, you know, and it is all kind of talk coming from, I want to say, you know, the bobbling heads on ESPN, which I heard, I think, very humorously referred to as like the Fox News of sports because it's like all SEC propaganda wing.
Well, ESPN doesn't have any vested financial interest in seeing the SEC do well, do they?
No, it's crazy. You know, it's insane. And I think anyone even, you know, raising that possibility that they would jump them. Now, that being said, I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that Ohio State beats Michigan State. I actually think Michigan State might surprise the hell out of everybody on Saturday.
Oh, no doubt about it. Michigan State is a solid team, and you know, the old, you know, cliche is that defense wins championships, and they certainly have the defense capable of doing that, and an offense that's coming around, although they only scored 14 against Minnesota last week.
Yeah, that's how weird is that?
I don't know. Iowa sure caught Minnesota at the right time this year. I'll tell you that.
Yeah. So, I think that it's not a foregone conclusion that either of these teams are talking about jumping the other. And it's like, well, let's see where they are after, after Saturday. But
How hilarious would it be if Duke actually beat Florida State? I think they're a 24-point underdog.
Yeah, that would be a bit of a stretch. Well, and the other part of that, equation is that, how would you like to be Michigan State right now? If you win Saturday, you're in the Rose Bowl. If you lose, you're probably in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah, it's funny. You and I were talking on our way up to Iowa City last night, Tuesday night, about how Michigan State kind of has the opposite situation that Iowa did in 2002. Same situation, one non-conference loss against a rival and undefeated against a Big Ten slate. Prior to playing Ohio State. Of course, they'll get the opportunity that Iowa didn't. But what was interesting to me, Jim, is that if you recall, Iowa was getting a lot of props nationally. I mean, people talking about, Iowa potentially being a top five team. If they hadn't lost to Iowa State, would they be in the national title game? And Michigan State very quietly goes 11-1 and undefeated against the Big Ten, and nobody really talks about them at all.
Nope, Sparty can't get no respect.
However, as you pointed out, no matter what happens, they're pretty much guaranteed a Rose Bowl. And Iowa, in my opinion, I've always felt, because I love the Rose Bowl, having grown up in a Big Ten town and being a Big Ten fan.
Well, for everybody more than in the 40 Big years. Ten, and this is the word for Penn State, for Nebraska for sure, and definitely for Maryland and Rutgers, is that all BCS and playoffs aside, everybody in the Big Ten has a big, huge boner for the Rose Bowl.
Well, anybody at least, our age or, definitely older.
Yeah, but I think that transcends, it goes back to the time when there was only one bowl that you could possibly go to.
Right. But what I'm getting at is that, Iowa, the only reason they went to the Orange Bowl and ended up getting beat by USC is because they were so highly thought of that the Orange Bowl picked us ahead of everybody else. They didn't let the Rose Bowl get us. And then if we'd have gone to the Rose Bowl, we'd have played a pretty mediocre Washington State team. And this whole talk about, Ferentz never being able to win a Rose Bowl and Iowa's Rose Bowl drought, that would be a thing of the past. We're a victim of our own success and respect.
Yeah, I think so. I think there's some truth to that. But you know what? Hey, give us that problem any year.
Oh, yeah. Going undefeated in the Big Ten doesn't never suck.
Yeah. So, well, I guess that's what else? I mean, that game was insane. The Auburn Alabama game. I was watching it with my wife, who is kind of casually interested in football, and she was just kind of sitting there reading, and she looks up at the screen and she watches it, and she just kind of blinks twice, pauses, and says, "Does that normally happen?"
Well, I made my wife and both my kids come downstairs because I'm watching it downstairs. They were doing something else. And I yelled upstairs, I'm like, "You guys have to come see this." And I rewound it and paused it on the DVR. And I was like, "You guys, this may be the best play in college football history." And my wife's like, no way. And my daughter, who doesn't even know or like football at all, so they all came down here. And they watched it, and they were all agape, and they made me rewind it. And even my wife was like, "Yeah, that's like the craziest thing I've ever seen in football."
So I was thinking about this because I, like most people, I probably watched that thing like 30 times between now and, I like the reaction videos too. YouTube is awesome for the fan reaction videos. That was hilarious. I was thinking about it. I think it might be easier to do that. To run back a fielded kick field goal, than running back like let's say just a standard kickoff, because in the kickoffs your coverage team has lanes and they're trying to contain and their responsibility for lane control. But in that they were because remember they had one block before and they knew that the trajectory is going to be low because it was so long, so they were like really focused on keeping everybody on the line as long as possible, right?
Oh, yeah. I don't think there's any question about that, Jim. I mean, the kickoff team is full of specialists whose job it is to go down and get a guy that's a return man.
Yeah. So once he fields it and starts running it out at top speed, it really feels like he's got a much greater advantage than, than, let's say, you know, a kickoff return or a punt return or any of those other kind of plays where you would expect that.
Yeah, the hardest part is getting the ball to not go over the back of the end zone line.
Yeah. I mean,
yeah, that's the whole key to the whole thing right there. Then once you have that, he's got the advantage, the returner does.
Yeah, as long as it's in the field of play, it feels like the returner's got it. Well, but on the other hand, they had, what, 50-some yards to get ready for him coming down the field, so maybe they should have actually taken it a little more seriously. I'm not dismissing it at all. It was one of the damnedest things I've ever seen live.
As the announcer said, though, it's all fat guys. I mean, you try to be out there at 300 pounds and have a guy that runs a 4.340 streaking down the sideline. What are you going to do?
Well, exactly. I mean, if you're saying you've got your holder, your kicker, and then every wall of muscle and blubber guy you can possibly put on there because you're trying to avoid the block, then yeah, it makes sense. I don't know. It was amazing. And it was amazing that not even just a few seconds before, how much, you know, the Auburn fan base was just, you know, bitching and moaning because they put another second back on the clock.
Right, right. Well, the best part for me was the look of just, like, disgust and depression on Saban's face, because I can't stand that guy.
Well, and he said something like, I told you so, like somebody, like lip reader was saying, he said, right. I told you so or something before he slammed his headset.
Yeah, well, he's the head coach, right? If he didn't want to do it, he should have said no.
Yeah, who are you talking to, man? Yourself? You got a turd in your pocket? So, yeah, no, that was a good one. And then the Michigan-Ohio State game was also just insane. And that was funny, is because I thought nothing could top that game.
You know what's funny about that, Jim, is I knew Brady Hoke was going to go for two, because he's just that guy, you know. Win it or lose it, you know, you know, and it's not even in retrospect. I said at the time, they might not get this, and I play for overtime at home. I don't care.
Really? Okay. Well, I mean, you saw where he said he asked the seniors.
Well, no, I respect that, and I don't have a big problem with what he did. I'm just saying what I would have personally done.
Yeah, and well, that's the thing. You play for the win on the road, and you play for overtime at home, and you know, I think he was probably – he and the seniors and most of that team, and hell, 100,000 people watching were probably just shocked that they were in the position to possibly win it. So,
well, no, and it was a great no-lose situation for Michigan. I mean, they've had a disappointing season. They, you know, all it was going to do is maybe change a little bit about what bowl they go to. So, yeah, go for it.
Yeah, you know, and I'm so glad that version of Michigan didn't show up the week before.
Well, you know, rivalry games are rivalry games. I mean, they were playing the role of Iowa State against Iowa a little bit, that one, right? How many times have we seen those guys overachieve against us?
Exactly. But, I mean, just everybody. I mean, Gallen was on fire. Gardner was, you know, hitting folks. I mean, some of the screens out to Funchess were just insane. I mean, everything was just, you know, Toussaint was running wild. When was the last time you heard him having a good game? It's just, it was, everything was clicking. And even, you know, everything was working for them in not a week too soon, as far as I'm concerned.
Absolutely.
So, all right. So, well, we don't have an expert this week, so I guess we can just move right into our predictions. You want to talk about where you think we're going to go for a bowl game? And all right, what are you hearing?
Well, I'm feeling kind of Outback-ish, I think. Little Tampa action. You know, I enjoy going to Tampa, so, and I may go there if we actually get there this year. So, yeah, I'm thinking Tampa. I'd love to play Texas A&M because I think that'd be a real win-win situation because, you know, with Johnny Manziel, last year's Heisman winner, with all the hype, you know,
still injured.
Well, I'm not injured enough where he wouldn't play.
Okay.
So I think Iowa has a lot to gain from that because I don't think A&M is a great football team. They have a great individual talent. So I think that's one where Iowa could actually go in and you know, have a good showing and beat them and gain some street cred.
Well, do you think that there's a danger of our destination getting, you know, you think that we could get passed over based on any kind of an outcome from the Big Ten championship, or you think that's pretty much set in stone?
You know, I've given up trying to read what this college football season landscape or college football landscape, how it works anymore. I mean, you know, as far as I'm concerned, Iowa's going to a bowl and that's awesome. So,
yeah.
You know, You know, Tampa obviously would be a nice bowl destination, but, you know, the Gator Bowl wouldn't be awful either. And I'd like going to Phoenix for Buffalo Wild Wings too, but it sounds like they really want Nebraska from everything I've been reading.
Yeah. Yeah, that makes sense. Well, and then it seems interesting to me that, like, you know, there seems to be two kinds of bowls. One is that you end up in a bowl that you really didn't deserve. Maybe you got there because of your fan base. And you're kind of playing, you know, I'm thinking like
Iowa in the inside against Oklahoma.
Yeah, and then I was thinking, what was the other one? And it's funny, you could have made the case the Capital One against LSU was that way.
True.
And then definitely, you know, the bowl against USC. And then sometimes you end up in a bowl game where, you know, you're on the rise and the other team is just struggling. I think about like that one time where we went the first Outback Bowl against Florida. Right. You know, when the Zucker was the coach of Florida, right. I keep forgetting right. He was the coach. And then, you know, like the South Carolina, in 08, you know, and sometimes, you know, and then sometimes it's a really great matchup. You know, I think that, the Georgia Tech matchup in the Orange Bowl, and I think the Missouri matchup was just, you know, could have gone either way. And game was very much in, you know, in doubt way up until the end. So, I don't know. I think I'm concerned. I want to see us go to a good bowl, but I don't want to see us go to a good bowl to the point that we get matched up against somebody like, you know, like let's say South Carolina. Like we're going in unranked. They're a top 10 team. You know, I got a friend that's a big South Carolina fan, and let me tell you, they're pissed that they're not in the SEC championship BCS discussion, and we're just thrilled to get a bowl game. So.
But, you know, sometimes, Jim, sometimes when that's the situation and a team feels like their season, like for Iowa, being 8-4 and getting in a bowl game, they're going to be hungry.
Well,
now,
that's true.
South Carolina is a team that thought they might have a shot at like a national championship or at least an SEC championship. And so what is their, you know, so much in bowl season is what is the mindset? Where's the team at? You know, what's their attitude? And, you know, that could actually end up kind of playing in Iowa's favor a little bit here, I think.
Well, yeah, I remember, and that reminds me of the, you have to go back, and I'm dating myself a little bit. I think it was the 95 Sun Bowl when, I don't know.
Against the Washington Huskies, and it was a revenge game for Iowa for losing the Rose Bowl against those same program in 1991.
Right, but they were the Pac-10 co-champs.
Right.
And we were like the fifth or fourth or whatever the hell. The Sun Bowl was not high up on the pecking order.
Nope.
And we took it to them.
Yeah. Yep, I remember that because that was the first time I like told a little white lie to get out of work to watch a football game.
Well,
so it was like during the middle of a work week.
It was in the middle of a work week, middle of a work day.
That was my first job out of college, though, and they were paying me $15,500 a year. So, you know, in retrospect, I should have probably taken like every Wednesday off.
All right, well, you know, it's definitely a different tone and a much better place to be sitting this year than last. So who can
we sound happy?
Yeah. Well, you know, we were talking before we started the recording about how, you know, the cynicism breeds some degree of creativity. I mean, but maybe not for your column, but for the podcast, they were just a little more visceral last year.
Are you saying that there's no creativity in my column? Because that you hurt me with your words, Jim.
No, last year you were saying it was like hard to come. You know, your thesaurus ran out of synonyms for suck.
Exactly. And the don't panic message can only be sent so long. No, you're right.
So, I mean, it just feels like it's, you know, what's funny is that, you know, you actually focus on the sport and the team and the players and the things going on around the league as opposed to, you know, just all the sideshow crap that was going on last year. I do believe that, you know, just as there was a group of folks, and this is not going to earn me any friends, but I don't give a shit. Just as there was perhaps a group of folks that were too quick to write Ferentz's pink slip last year, there may be a similar group of extremists that are like maybe a little too quick to write his you know, resurrection this year. I mean, he was in the talk for, you know, possibly coach of the year and all that stuff. And I'm like, you know,
no,
yeah, exactly. I mean, if he had gone from 4-8 to the Big Ten championship game, absolutely, you know, right. But I still think, you know, I think he would be the first one to say, you know, you're never as good as your last win or as bad as your last loss. Right. And I think that applies to, coaches and seasons as well. But
well, and the thing is, though, is and we were saying it last year. So I mean, I'm going to stick to my guns and I'm going to try to be, quote unquote, the voice of reason here. But the way the Iowa program is set up and the way it's always been is going to be a series of peaks and valleys. Now, we kind of climbed up the hill pretty quickly out of this last little valley, you know, but is there a guarantee that it's going to plateau off or lead us into elite status? No. I mean, look at what, like I said, look at, we are in that group. We're the Wisconsin, Nebraska, Michigan State, Penn State, you know, that is where we are. Well, shit, Michigan might be there now too. I mean, outside of Ohio State, we are in that second tier of teams that is, you know, a lot's going to depend on schedule, injuries, attrition, those three things.
Right.
You know, we have a good coach and we have a solid program. And when things are hitting, you're going to be between 8 to 10 to more wins. If you start to have some of those potholes in there, you're going to get knocked down to around 500 or even below 500 if crap really hits the fan. That's reality.
Yeah, no, I think that is the, you know, we have to guard against our expectations lest we become the delusional versions of Nebraska fans that we were just mocking a little bit ago. So,
well, that was my favorite quote from Ferentz was before the Nebraska game, I think, or maybe it was after, I can't remember. But one of the reporters asked him about the Pelini situation and you know, what do you think would happen if you won 9 games every year? Would you be on the hot seat? And Ferentz's answer was, well, I don't know, but I'd sure like to find out.
Yes.
Now, I would actually personally rather have those, you know, that 11-1 season in 2002, the Big Ten championship in 2004, rather than, you know, 9-3, 9-3, 8-4, 9-3. Personally, I'd prefer peaks and valleys if the peaks are higher.
Yeah, I suppose so. I mean, I'd like to see us maybe punch through just a little bit higher on the peaks to where we are not co-champions, but we actually are an outright Big Ten champion. And, you know, we go and win a Rose Bowl. You know, and I have told you, you know, BCS, national championship, playoff, all that crap is so, you know, far removed from your, you know, influence or control that I don't really fault anybody for not achieving that stuff. But I do feel like that's probably as high as you can go, you know, of your own accord, and then everything else just kind of has to fall. The chips have to fall the right way.
You know, I agree with that. I will make this one caveat though. 2002 was kind of a bullcrap situation though, because it was pre Big Ten championship game and you beat every team on your Big Ten schedule. So to me, you know, if anybody wants to poo poo Iowa as being a, you know, co-champ that year, well, why don't you tell me how many times your program's gone undefeated in the Big Ten?
Well, it wasn't undefeated. We were undefeated in the Big Ten. Ohio State was undefeated, like, entirely, if I recall.
Yep, that is true. But we would have kicked their ass, so.
We would have completely swished them, and I think they know it, too.
At the end of the year.
Yeah.
The way that team was rolling.
Yeah, so. All right, well, you know, what are our plans? What's the podcast? This isn't the end, right? We got another one. For the after the bowl game, or
yeah, I think we do a bowl one, and then, you know, I think we check in a couple times maybe during the basketball season, since, you know, we're getting you back into basketball. I've got season tickets this year. So.
I have little to contribute though to the basketball, except for just you know, comic relief.
See, that's not really true. I mean, you played some basketball,
junior high, junior varsity. Yeah, nothing serious.
Yeah, but don't you remember you and I rolling on the courts back behind Burge?
Well, but I would say once you got to a point in your school career where, you know, athletic ability and skill started to matter, that's when I stopped playing basketball. So.
Are you telling me that there is not a place for mildly out of shape 5'10" white guys in world basketball?
There was. It was, like you said, it was on the little cement chain link courts out in Burge in the early 90s, which, by the way, I think if they're there now, they're like completely redone and nice. And we went back to Iowa City last night, and I just couldn't believe how little of some of the dingier areas that we used to hang out with they really classed up the joint.
Yeah, the boulderization of Iowa City, I call it.
I feel bad that, you know, the kids that go to school now and they want to get drunk and, you know, hang out in bars. I mean, they really have to bring their wallet with them this time. I mean, we used to be able to, what was that bar that we were at where the guy was offering you a a scotch for $24. I'm like, come on, can you imagine?
That was the place that used to be One-Eyed Jake's. That's what's crazy. That was like the diviest of dives. And now it's like this swanky, you know, hipster cocktail and craft beer hangout.
Okay, but I mean, can you imagine if somebody back in the day had said, yeah, you can have that drink, it's only $24. I probably would have punched him.
What I would have said is, well, I'm going to Vito's where I could get 100 beers for $1 or $10. Remember 10 cent drafts?
There was nickel draft night, or there were different places where you'd go in and you'd buy a bracelet for like $20 and you'd just drink until you couldn't see straight, you know? Right. And I'm like, give me a break. $24 for a for whiskey. And nowadays, you know, you and I now we're like, oh, that must be a pretty good scotch.
Entitlement culture.
It is a change. We're sounding kind of grumpy old crotchety guys right now, but
we kind of are grumpy crotchety old guys right now. I'm drinking expensive scotch as we speak, actually.
And yet it had no effect whatsoever on the quality of the podcast. Plus or minus.
This is true.
All right. Well, let's call it a night. Let's, you know, let's hope for a solid bowl. Let's see if we get a good draw. And
ooh, can I say on Iowa?
You say it.
On Iowa.
Go Hawks.
I never get to say on Iowa.
Oh, well, I thought that was kind of our thing, but I didn't know.
I know. That's why it was funny.
See, now we're going to lose our bowl game. It's because you did that.
All right.